ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भागवती उत्तम श्लोके
Bhaktirbhavati
Naishtiki.
This
morning we're reading from 1st Canto, Chapter 2, entitled Divinity and Divine Service, text number 12. Tat Shradadanaha Munaya Tachadadana
Munaya
Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya Pasyanti Atmani Chatmanam Pasyantyatmani Chatmanam
Pasyantyatmani Chatmanam
Pasyantyatmani Chatmanam
Pasyantyatmani Chatmanam
Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya
Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya
Tachadadana Munaya
Tachadadana Munaya
Tachadadana
Munaya Tachadadana Munaya
Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya
Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya
Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya
Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya
Pasyantyatmani Chatmanam
Pasyantyatmani Chatmanam
Pasyantyatmani Chatmanam
Pasyantyatmani Chatmanam
Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya
Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya
Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya Tachadadana
Munaya
Jnana Vairagya
Yuktaya
Pasyantyatmani Chatmanam Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya Tachadadana
Munaya
Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya Pasyantyatmani Chatmanam Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya Tat That Shradadanaha Seriously Inquisitive
Munaya
Sages
Jnana
Knowledge
Vairagya
Detachment
Yuktaya
Well equipped with
Pasyanti
See
Atmani
within himself
Cha
and
Atmanam
the Paramatma
the
Paratatma as Dhruva Maharaj would say he kept saying Paratatma again and again So where are we? Paratatma. Bhaktya. In devotional service. Shruta.
The Vedas.
Grihitaya.
Well
received. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. Responsibly, please repeat. The seriously inquisitive student or sage
Well equipped with knowledge
and detachment.
Realizes that absolute truth
by rendering devotional service
in terms of what he has heard
from the Vedanta Shruti. Very good. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The absolute truth is realized in full by the process of devotional service to the Lord, Vasudev, or the personality of Godhead, who is the full-fledged absolute truth. Brahman is his transcendental bodily effulgence, and Paramatma is his partial representation. As such, Brahman, or Paramatma realization of the absolute truth, is but a partial realization. There are four different types of human beings: the karmis, the gyanis, the yogis, and the devotees. The karmis are materialistic, whereas the other three are transcendental. The first-class transcendentalists are the devotees who have realized the Supreme Person. The second-class transcendentalists are those who have partially realized the plenary portion of the Absolute Person. And the third-class transcendentalists are those who have barely realized the spiritual focus of the Absolute Person. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures, the Supreme Person is realized by devotional service, which is backed by full knowledge and detachment from material association. We have already discussed the point that devotional service is followed by knowledge and detachment from materials association. So that was a verse that we read recently. What was that verse? Go on. Agi kaha ar. We were just talking about detachment and knowledge. Jana. Jana yat yashu vairagyam jnanam cha yad ahoitukam. By practicing, the result of practicing devotional service is that one will automatically develop knowledge and renunciation or detachment. You'll get free from his material attachments. There's no extraneous or other process required than the simple process of devotional service. And devotional service is also relatively easy in the sense that it means Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam. Using your senses, not killing your senses, not denying your senses, but engaging your senses in the service of the master of the senses, Sri Krishna. And that is also explained nicely in the Bhagavad Gita. Yad kuroshi. All that you do, tat kurushva mad arpanam. We simply try to offer the fruits of our work for the service of God. And that also under the direction of spiritual authorities. And this is very pleasing to Radharani, and it is very pleasing to Lord Krishna. And thus our heart will be purified of all unwanted bad things. Abhadra, nasta prayeshu, abhadreshu. All the dirty things within the heart will be purified just by this simple process of bhakti yoga. Yoga is the linking process with God, and there are different processes of yoga. That is explained here in this purport. And Dhruva Maharaj also explained yesterday that the jnanis and the yogis, they practice yoga. Jnana yoga means to speculate upon God, to think that God is not in the material world, God is not this, God is not that. It's sometimes called the process of neti-neti. Na-iti, not this, not this, not this. So, the Gyanis, Prabhupada once described that they try to expand their limited capacity. They puff themselves up just like frogs trying to understand. And the original commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sridhar Swami, explained that it is something like mental masturbation, that they expand their mind, and then it explodes. And then they rest in some kind of void, not void exactly, but some kind of conception of Brahman. And the yogis, of course, they practice Ashtanga Yoga. Dhruva explained that yesterday, that before you can practice anything, you have to be pious. So yam and niyam, rules and regulations. No matter what some people may say, yoga means niyam. You cannot develop control of your mind and senses and focus your senses on God without some type of regulation. It's not that, again, it's not that we're trying to stop the senses, but we regulate them. Just like if you get a license for driving and then you go at 200 miles an hour and the policeman stops you and you say, oh, I have a license. Well, you have a license, but that's to go at 100 miles an hour, not at 200 miles an hour. So regulation means to keep things yukta hara viharasya, yukta chestasya karmasu, yukta svapna vavodasya, yoga bhavati dukkha. So these rules and regulations people don't like, unfortunately. The mind doesn't like them because the mind has had some kind of so-called independence for many, many lifetimes. And now we're trying to rein the mind in, just like you, a wild horse, you put a bridle and bit in the horse's mouth and you rein him in. He doesn't like that. He'll jump and fight and bite, and the cowboy just has to get on the horse and stay with him and rein him in, control him. It's a wild horse. So we have to rein in the wild mind. Bhaktisiddhanta said about the mind that in the morning I take a stick. I think it was a stick in the morning and chapels in the evening, I'm not sure. Anyway, the point was he said, I beat my mind. Of course, that is a proverbial. You don't actually beat your head with a stick, but not that your mind is in your head per se, but you really have to make an endeavor to make your mind your friend. Otherwise, your mind definitely will degrade you. If you don't try to control your senses, control your mind, therefore, the regulative principles, the niyam, they're called regulative principles of freedom. Prabhupada translates this verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Regulative principles of freedom. They'll set you free. Because right now you're a slave to your demanding senses. So yam niyam, then comes asan. And asan is only, it's not this fellow in Pune celebrating his 80th birthday or something. Iyengar, BS Iyengar, BKS, I mean. He's expert at turning his legs this way and his head that way and his nose this way, and he's trained so many people to do that, and they think they're practicing yoga. But the purpose of asana is to be able to control the life airs within the body. And that also has a reason. Pranayama pratyahara, so that you can focus your mind. But people don't know where they should focus their mind. Therefore, being foolish, they're misled by someone like Mr. Iyengar to focus their mind on something impersonal, which is klesho dikataresteshaṁ of yakta sakta chetasam, is full of difficulty, klesha. The mind is meant to be focused on the form of Godhead, not on some impersonal imaginative conception. So then samadhi pratyahara dharana dhyana and samadhi, but samadhi on Krishna. So those who, just like when you go to a ticket counter, whether it be a train counter or a plane, you don't go to the counter and say, give me a ticket to anywhere. You have to name a destination where you want to go. So there are different conceptions for different classes of men. Those who are satisfied with just merging in Brahman, they're actually offensive to Krishna. The Mayavadis, they're offensive because they minimize the personality of Godhead. They think, I will become equal to God. I will merge with Brahman and Tattvamasi. I will become that absolute truth. Krishna did not have to meditate to achieve his position. The absolute truth does not forget that he is the absolute truth. He is not poor. He is not Daridra. He is Lakshmi Narayan, Lakshmi Pati. He is the Parameshwar. He is the Mayeshwar. He controls Maya. He does not become at any time forgetful. So this idea that I will practice yoga and I will become God is ludicrous. And it's only a partial realization of the absolute truth. So to actually come to the real point, one has to be seriously inquisitive. Here it is said, shadadhana. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Dhruva Maharaj was quoting yesterday, also throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that in order to know him as he is, he says, practically speaking, mam tu veda na kaschana. One cannot know Krishna completely because he's achintya, he's inconceivable. But if you want to understand something about him, then he can reveal something about himself to you, but he is only inclined to do that to those who are his devotees. Bhaktosime sakacheti, to those who are favorable to them. God never helps his competitors. If you're a competitor with God, you want to try and become equal. So he says, bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvata, that one can know me in truth only by devotional service. Bhaktya tananyaya sakyaha aham evam vido Arjuna. Gyatum drashtum cha tattvena praveshtum cha parantapa. I can be understood by, to those who are devoted to me, I give them the knowledge by which they can understand me. I give them the realization by which they can have a perfect conception, both as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. One who understands Bhagavan realization, he's not bereft of understanding Paramatma or Brahman. But he knows that the highest destination is to achieve the lotus feet of Krishna in devotional service. So, Prabhupada has explained here in the purport the different class, as he calls them, first class, second class, and third class transcendentalists. As Brahman and Paramatma realization are imperfect realizations of the Absolute Truth, so the means of realizing Brahman and Paramatma, i.e. the paths of Jnana and Yoga, are also imperfect means of realizing the Absolute Truth. Devotional service, which is based on the foreground of full knowledge combined with detachment from material association, and which is fixed in the oral reception of the Vedanta Shruti, is the only perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the Absolute Truth. And this is one reason we have to maintain, at least if we don't, like the six Goswamis, sit all day long and discuss Krishna Katha, at least we must have a Bhagavatam class every day. Ityam Bhagavata Sevaya. If we don't make a practice, the tendency of devotees, especially when they get out of the temple environment where there's a regulated schedule, the tendency is to become irregular. And then some things get neglected. And it should be our endeavor to surround ourselves when you get up in the morning and you have to go through your ablutions, turn on a tape of Prabhupada lecture and listen. When you're working, cooking in the kitchen or working in the garden or whatever it may be, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you have to hear. Because of this Krishna Katha, Srut Satam, one becomes purified by Srinvatam Svakatha Krishna. One becomes cleansed of anarthas, which are blocking our path, by the process of Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. So we have to take that initiative somehow or other. We have to achieve the result. There's no excuse. Oral reception, seriously inquisitive student. Devotional service is not therefore meant for the less intelligent class of transcendentalists. There are three classes of devotees, namely first, second, and third class. Third class devotees are neophytes who have no knowledge, are not detached from material association, who are simply attracted by the preliminary process of worshipping the deity in the temple, are called material devotees. So there are, from the Puranas, there's a description of the different kleshas of devotees. Actually, it's from the Bhagavatam. Sarva bhuteshu yat pashyat bhagavat bhavam atmana bhutani bhagavatyatmani esha bhagavatottama. The most advanced devotee sees within everything the soul of all souls, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Consequently, he sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord and understands that everything that exists is eternally situated within the Lord. So this is the description of Anuttam Bhagavat devotee who is constantly seeing Krishna. There's another nice description of him here, a little more esoteric. I don't know if I can find it. Says he sees the devotee of the Lord. Says, once, of course, some Vishnu Jana and some other devotees asked Prabhupada, when you see Krishna everywhere, is it an understanding in your mind, or is it a vision that comes in front of you? And Prabhupada's answer was no. In other words, neither. He said, it's a fact. Krishna is existing everywhere, within everything, and the pure devotee is seeing that at all times. The Mahabhagavat devotee is seeing Krishna. One is Stavara Jangama Deke, Na Deke Tar Murti. Next verse. Stavara jangama deke na deke tar murti sarvatra hoy nija ishta deva spurti. The Mahabhagavat, the advanced devotee, certainly sees everything mobile and immobile. But he does not exactly see their forms. Rather, everywhere he immediately sees manifest the form of the Supreme Lord. This is Lord Chaitanya speaking to Ramananda Roya. Stavara jangama deke na deke tar murti. Sarvatra hoy nija ishta deva spurti.
What does ishta deva refers to?
Ishta deva means, of course, in this case, Krishna, but sometimes it's people in India use it to mean their family deity or their chosen deity or whatever. Ishta deva, worshipable Lord.
Is it sometimes what they said that devotees who are on the highest platform, they carry their deity in their heart, like something like that?
That's true. They may worship some. You see all the different.
One of the seven types of deities. One is mind.
In Vrindavan also, you see all the different Goswamis had different deities that they were worshipping. Sanatana Goswami had Shalagram that he hung from a tree. And like that. Different deities. Second class devotee. Ishware tadadineshu balisheshu dvisatshucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadhyana madhyama. An intermediate or second class devotee called Madhyamadhikari offers his love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is a sincere friend to all devotees of the Lord, and he shows his mercy to ignorant people who are innocent and disregards those who are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Again, this is Sri Kavi to King Nimi from the Bhagavatam. This is verse 45, 46, and 47. Achayam eva haraye pujam yashada deyate natad bhakteshu chanyeshu sa bhakta prakrita smita. Here's a prakrita bhakta, a materialistic devotee. He's a devotee. But he's a prakritic, a materialistic devotee. A devotee who faithfully engages in the worship of the deity in the temple, but does not behave properly toward other devotees or people in general, is called a prakrita bhakta. A materialistic devotee is considered to be in the lowest position. We're being trained to at least come to the platform of madhyam. Because there are many religions around the world, and they could be called, at best, Kanishta Adhikaris. God is in my church, and he's nowhere else, and they're not very good at behaving towards other devotees. Some people even cut off people's heads and do all kinds of crazy things because people don't belong to their church. Or their mosque. And so, nice that they're devotees. Maybe they'll get some advancement, but not much. Actually, the symptom of a third-class devotee is that his faith is very weak, and today he may be very strong in his profession of his faith, but tomorrow he may be out in sinful life again, so he can't be taken very seriously. And therefore, Prabhupada says devotional service is not meant for the less intelligent class of transcendentalists. Therefore, one has to make definite progress from the position of material devotional service to second-class devotional position. In the second-class position, the devotee can see four principles in the devotional line, namely, the personality of Godhead, his devotees, the ignorant, and the envious. So he sees four kinds of persons, the Madhyamadhikari. He adores the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He makes friends with the devotees. He tries to share his realizations or preach to the ignorant. And he avoids the envious because Prakopaya Upadesho hi murkhanam Prakopaya na shantaye. Upadesh, you don't give good instruction to murk, to a fool, because they will simply turn that nectar that you give them into, it will just give strength to their poison. If you give milk to a snake, he'll drink this wonderful food milk, and then he'll develop lots of poison to bite you with. So, we have to be careful about preaching the glories of the Lord to the faithless or the envious. One has to raise himself at least to the stage of a second-class devotee and thus become eligible to know the absolute truth. A third-class devotee, therefore, has to receive the instructions of devotional service from the authoritative sources of the Bhagavad. The number one Bhagavat is the established personality of devotee, and the other Bhagavatam is the message of Godhead. The third-class devotee, therefore, has to go to the personality of devotee in order to learn the instructions of devotional service. Such a personality of devotee is not a professional man who earns his livelihood by the business of Bhagavatam. Such a devotee must be a representative of Sukadeva Goswami, like Sutta Goswami, and must preach the cult of devotional service for the all-round benefit of the people. A neophyte devotee has very little taste for hearing from the authorities. A neophyte devotee has very little taste for hearing from the authorities. Such a neophyte devotee makes a show of hearing from the professional man to satisfy his senses. This sort of hearing and chanting has spoiled the whole thing. So one should be very careful about the faulty process. The holy messages of Godhead as inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam are undoubtedly transcendental subjects, but even though they are so, such transcendental matters are not to be received from the professional man who spoils them as the serpent spoils milk simply by the touch of his tongue. So, in the Puranas also it is said, a Vaishnava, not a Vaishnava. Someone who is not a Vaishnava or a pure devotee. Mukodgirnam putam hari katamritam. Shravanam naiva. One should not hear hari katha from someone who is a Vaishnava. Why? Because sarpo chista yatha payaha. It will have poisonous effect, just like giving milk to a serpent has just increases his poison. So, or drinking milk that has been touched by the lips of a serpent. That's the example. Sometimes in the villages, the villagers will milk the cows and they'll leave the bucket of milk sitting there while they go and do some other chore. And snakes are there in the villages, in the barn or whatever. They don't usually have a barn, but there'll be snakes come and crawl up the pot and take some milk. So then he's left his mark, the poison, and then the villager comes back and drinks the milk and may get poisoned. So we have to be very careful to hear Krishna consciousness from the right source, from Vaishnavas, and that also through the preceptorial line, through the parampara, through the authorized source. That's one of the reasons why we're having so much trouble right now, is we're struggling to find out, to be very careful how to receive this message from Srila Prabhupada. Because we all know, all of us know, that if there's a slight deviation in the transcendental sound, then we won't get perfect Krishna consciousness. We might get something second class or third class, but we won't get first class devotional service. So it's an item of great importance, and devotees are struggling to understand that. A sincere devotee must therefore be prepared to hear the Vedic literature like the Upanishads, Vedanta, and other literatures left by the previous authorities or Goswamis for the benefit of his progress. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service becomes worthless, and therefore a sort of disturbance in the path of devotional service. Unless, therefore, devotional service is established on the principles of Shruti, or knowledge which is the original Vedas, heard, that which is heard, Smriti, the Puranas and other corollary literatures, Purana or Pancharatra authorities, the make-show of devotional service should at once be rejected. An authorized devotee should never be recognized as an unauthorized devotee should never be recognized as a pure devotee. By assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literatures, one can see the all-pervading localized aspect of the personality of God within his own self constantly. This is called samadhi. So as we move around India, we will actually get a chance to see many pseudo devotees of the Lord. I remember once in 1970 in Los Angeles, one lady came from Vrindavan. She has an ashram right near Krishna Balaram Mandir. And so she came to Los Angeles, came to the Los Angeles temple, and she did some kirtan and she swooned on the floor, fainted on the floor of the temple room. So the devotees didn't know quite what to do, so they wrote a letter to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said that if that happens again, you kick the person in the head. If they're actually in samadhi, then it won't disturb them. But sahajiyas, even today in Vrindavan, you'll find real live. They're not, you know, in the West we read of, what was sahajya, impersonalist? What are all these things that Prabhupada's preaching so strongly about? I don't see any sahajyas. I don't see any impersonalists. Mayavadis, where are these Mayavadis, monsters? But you can see them today in Vrindavan. You find people who actually, literally, dress up as Radha and Krishna and pretend and have rasa dances and there are other types of sahajiyas. What are there, 8 kinds of sahajiyas or something? Bhaktisiddhanta identified the owls and bowls and...
Smart.
Hmm?
Smart.
What?
Smartas.
Smartas.
Upasampradayas.
Yeah, upasampradayas. Okay, there are different kinds of sahajiyas anyway. But we have to... be very careful. Okay. Getting late. I go. He just came. This is Adbhuta Hari Das. Came last night. This is Pundarik. And Rani.
Can I ask something?
Okay.
You mentioned that Ganeshita Adhikari devotees, like all these like persons, like actually especially here in India, like Christians and Muslims, they don't have steady faith, but usually they're big fanatics, so it's very difficult to change their opinion by preaching. So.
Yeah, they have actually, they have a kind of blind faith, which is probably mixed with a lot of false ego too. That blind faith or sentimental faith, that's what evolves them into fanatics. It's those kind of persons is probably not so, they're probably pretty good kanishtas. You know, maybe you got kanishtas who are real superficial. These might be uttam kanishtas. The topmost kanishta. you probably couldn't convert a Muslim into a Christian very easily. But they, what was your question exactly?
You said that the faith of Kanishtha Adhikar is not very steady, but they are pretty fanatic.
Yeah.
So it's like we're preaching sometimes, and you can give whatever kind of philosophy to them, something to, you know, defeat them, but they will not accept.
That's a huge question. How to? You really have to judge carefully whether you want to spend time with some people. There are some people who are actually sincere. I mean, for what it's worth, some of us were Christians before. At least, I mean, Kanishtha Christian. I was a Christian, sort of. But then I got kind of fried. They were all just so good, born again, so they were just pretty crazy people. But I looked at Christianity, I looked at especially the Protestants. So you've got to judge whether someone can be influenced by giving him some superior knowledge, or whether the person is just going to waste your time. Like you devotees in the West, in America especially, have had a lot of experience preaching to fanatic Christian groups where you meet someone and he shows a little interest in your book, and so you think, oh, I'll preach to him, and you spend an hour and you think, you know, just you're going to convert him, and then he says, yeah, but have you bathed in the blood of Jesus yet, you know, and you just wasted an hour. They're not hearing you. Yeah.
And also, like, it is, you said that Kanishtha is interested in temple worship. What form of temple worship? Is it that they just come to every Sunday at the church, or it can also be meant in the temple, like our devotees?
Yeah, that's a good question. Definitely, some of our devotees are.
It could be a
pujari.
Yeah. Shopping every day.
Yeah.
Fireworks even.
Yeah. There's an injunction in the Nectar of Devotion that if a pujari is offering worship and a pure devotee is coming, he should stop the worship and respect the pure devotee. But most of our pujaris are like proud peacock. Not most, I won't say. I'll say some. Possibly could be. I'll be polite. Some of our pujaris possibly could be proud peacocks, thinking that they're doing, you know, such important service. But it's important, it's nice, but the real business of members of the Krishna consciousness movement is to preach. Puja is not, you know, I mean, like Jnanivas is certainly not a Kanishtha Adhikari just because he's doing puja. He's a wonderful, saintly person. But he spends a lot of time preaching. In temples, sometimes you find also the pujaris. Some of the pujaris are very expert preachers, and they meet people who come to the temple and preach. They'll be even sitting, you know. Our devotees, they sit and, you know, they just got the Charanamrita and they just sit there and, you know, do this. You'll find in some temples the pujaris actually have the Bhagavatam and they're reading, and somebody comes, okay, and goes back to his reading, studying the Shastra. So the cook or the main thing is preaching. Everybody else is supporting the preachers. The preachers are on the front line. So the preacher needs to come and fix his mind on the deity. He needs to focus. But so the pujari is assisting him by doing that service for him.
Something about, like, his last question too applies here. It's not just a matter of external show. We can make a very good show of devotional service, or a very good show of being you know, having staunch faith, but actually it is, you know, it doesn't really have, it doesn't, sometimes it doesn't manifest, like the Christians also, they don't manifest their faith by, you know, so many things like eating meat and everything. They may claim that they're big followers, and just like, you know, the Kanishta devotees, they may also claim to be great devotees or even seeing Krishna, worshipping Krishna on the altar and like that, but they, like Maharaj said, when they appear to what he comes, they don't know how to respect, they don't know how to preach. It's a, just external, we can't see.
God, Krishna, what makes devotee?
I somehow think that this, when we compare to Christians, that this is not proper. Because what are they? We should speak to our community. Because I think there are Kanishtas and Madhavas in our community. So what if you say a Christian, we think we are not Kanishtas.
No, no, you're right. We should call a spade a spade. if we see a Kanishta, it doesn't matter what cloth he's wearing. But we should not just stick to our community also, because the Bhagavatam helps us to understand everything, and we want to, in the right perspective, what are worshippers of demigods, what are Christians, what are Muslims, why are there so many faiths in the world? People are bewildered today. People don't take up spiritual life just because, you know, on every street corner there's a different church. So we're offering some explanation, but you're right, we shouldn't neglect our own house, get our own house in order. Bhakti, let's put it this way, Bhakti Siddhanta, story has it, that when he left this world, he was 62 years old, relatively young, but he was just uninspired. He was a little disturbed that his, he had built up a big mission, but there were so many Kanishta Adhikaris. The point Prabhupada makes is, even you're Kanishta, but you should endeavor to become Madhyam, not that you remain Kanishta. And it's the duty of the leaders to engage the devotees in programs which will help them to advance. For example, book distribution, or Harinam, or other such preaching programs can purify. And everybody can advance to become an Uttama Adhikari. There's nobody who is eternally a Kanishta Bhakta.
I was just now, when I came to India, I went to Radha Kundas, and there, I heard there are different statements about taking bath in Radha Kund. So what is the problem? Is it okay or not?
I've heard different statements, but as far as I know, ISKCON devotees all take bath there. I don't think you should take bath, but I don't think you should go swimming there. Mm-hmm. You can take a very reverential dip. Bath, huh?
A dip.
Yeah, a reverential dip. But at one point I heard that we don't like to put our feet into Radha Kund, therefore we don't take bath in Radha Kund. But since then I've heard from Brijabasi devotees, etc., that, you know, everybody bathes in Radha Kund, and our acharyas bathe there, so we also do. Is that correct?
The instruction is there.
Huh?
The instruction is there.
To take bath in Radha Kund, right.
Because I heard these devotees were with me from disciples of Krishna Kshetra Prabhu, they don't take bath. He said like it's not good, and that Srila Prabhupada also didn't take.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Prabhupada didn't take bath.
At least for Seva Kunj, I heard that he says that some devotees said to go there, and he said, Srila Prabhupada said, I'm not pure enough to go there.
Yeah.
So out of humility, or if the spiritual master orders you not to, of course, then you definitely shouldn't take bath. But out of humility, some devotees may not take bath also.
But when Prabhupada went to Radha Kund, he took a little water on his head, but he didn't That's where the thing about we don't want to put our feet in.
I didn't hear that Shilpa took there. Yeah. At least during his time, before he went to, I don't know.
Yeah, devotees were taking bath there. He didn't.
Under his instruction, sometime, Guru Kripa said that he went with Srila Prabhupada and he told him to take bath.
Oh, okay.
But it was there.
And it is there in the books.
Spiritual master is the best. Das Ras is quoting some verse, I think, from Raghunath Das Goswami or something, and he says that the spiritual master's disappearance, he felt like the Govardhan Hill was a big serpent, and with a big mouth opening up and devouring like that. Like, without the mercy of the spiritual master, we have no business or no qualification to do anything. It's like Guru or Yogya to be charged. No qualification for taking one step like that. Spiritual life.
I've taken bath in Radhakund. Have you?
I don't go. I don't every time I go.
Yeah.
Especially if I have a large group, I don't.
Yeah.
When I have a group, I don't do it at all now, because I don't want to. You know, if someone wants to go, they'll go.
Yeah. Right.
That's that. And he has the permission, or because like. He said some devotees don't have permission, and therefore, when a group is there, I don't.
Yeah.
So that they don't feel that
someone's got an inferior instruction or superior instruction.
Don't cause any confusion.
You could write a letter to Krishna Kshetra and ask him why that's true, because sometimes there's a misunderstanding even of disciples of the spiritual master. So.
But in Shastras is stated that if one comes by chance to Radhakund, he should take that. Because that's the way he will attain Krishna.
Yeah, I mean, Bhaktisiddhanta had his bhajan kutu there, and he used to take bath in Radhakund.
There's the instructions also about chanting Kirtaniya Siddhari, but to speak of that, I mean, but even Bhaktisiddhanta said that anyone who doesn't chant 64 rounds is fallen. And, many instructions are there in Shastras, but what is our qualification, to follow those instructions? We have to consider.
Yeah.
Somewhere it seems that Bhaktisiddhanta has thrown someone into Radhakund.
He what?
He thrown someone into Radhakund. Some of his disciples. He was something, and he was. I just read in those those texts, which I received in Brahmacharya. He was not satisfied with him, so he just thrown him in a radical or something. Anyway.
Yeah. Definitely, we should, whatever we do, we should always consult with the conservative. Don't do things impulsively.
I like the Srila Prabhupada gives nice purport between Birkhit Maharaj. He's asking all the great sages when they're coming. He's sitting on the bank of the Ganges, and so many great sages comes, and he inquires from each one of them, now what is my duty at the time of death?
Yeah.
And he was a Mahabhagavat, actually. He knew what his duty was, and actually he was waiting for Shukadeva Goswami to actually give the authoritative.
Right.
But Srila Prabhupada gives nice version, nice purport. He says that this is Vaishnava etiquette. You should always take, even you know what your duty is, still you should take permission from higher, senior personalities like that.
Got that, Tony? Mm-hmm.
Yesterday on the market, I saw one guy selling Shivas. Vishnu's
Forget it.
Eye drops. Like this. Very nice.
Vishnu's eye drops.
Is this the name? Well, explain me. I knew it was Shiva, but he said this is from Vishnu Fishnu's, right? Or what?
Vishnu Stone.
Oh, Vishnu Stone.
What I have understood is that you should not go out somewhere and purchase a Shila. The Shila has to be given to you by someone who either received it or who went to the Gandaki and found it.
My question was just, if someone buys this and put it in his house, what's the effect? negative or positive or not knowing?
I would say something positive for someone who has nothing. But, you know, if you're already understanding the proper procedure and you don't follow that, then it might have a negative effect. Mm-hmm. Like Prabhupada told us to take deities and sell them as dolls and people could put them on their mantelpiece. And so there's an advantage for people doing that. But if we do that and don't worship the deity properly, jai. Thank you very much.